This is Jason Albert, and you're listening to the Faster Skeeter Podcast. In this episode, you'll hear an interview with Canadian national team head coach Justin Wadsworth, in which he discusses the team's new energy and status after its Park City, Utah training camp. What do you find to be the biggest differences between the U.S. and Canadian models currently?
Right now, I think the biggest thing is that we're a bit more centralized in Canada. We have our center here in Canmore, where a majority of our athletes are based and have access to coaching and physiology and strength training on a consistent basis through the national program. And then we also have training centers, Thunder Bay and Quebec, that we work with. So we have actually, you know, national training centers that are tied into the system, versus in the U.S. where you have the U.S. ski team, which comes all together for training camps from different places, from different clubs and whatnot. So I think that's the biggest probably differences in the programs, that we have a little bit more centralized program, and the U.S. has more club-based, and then they come together for training camps. And I think both systems have their positives and their negatives. And yeah, it's interesting, though, having been part of one system and switching to a different one.
What do you think the upside is for, you know, for your model?
You know, I think the upside is, obviously, I get a lot of time with my athletes here every week. And, you know, we have to always balance that. You don't want to, you know, have athletes getting tired of you, and you don't want to get tired of them. And so it's really easy here in Canmore to see each other a lot. So I think that's a positive thing for sure, because I can, you know, almost every week I see two intensity workouts, and I pop in for strength and check on the athletes. So we can really keep an eye on what's going on, and we can always kind of, you know, keep the monitoring up pretty easily. So that's a really, you know, a good thing on the plus side. I think, you know, if the athletes aren't from Canmore and they have to live here, then sometimes that can be a negative. You know, not that Canmore is a bad place to live, but, you know, there are athletes that, you know, really work well in their home environment, maybe with a club coach. So, you know, in those cases, we try not to, you know, force people to be here, but it is our system. I think the benefits outweigh the negatives when you're looking at it.
What specifically about Canadian ski culture has influenced you the most?
Probably the biggest thing, you know, is been the amount of support that we have from different entities than in the U.S. So in Canada, our team and the national sports federations are supported by the government, and also other entities like Own the Podium and Sport Canada, which is part of the government. We have great corporate sponsors at Cross Country Canada on top of that. So I feel like from a funding perspective, especially, you know, coming from the U.S. program, when I started coaching here in Canada, I could really do things that I wanted to do instead of just nickel and diming all the time.
What would be the overreaching coaching philosophy within Cross Country Canada?
I guess I would be leading that philosophy. So I'll just tell you how I feel it is. But I mean, I think we really have a careful, scientific based program where we really it's athlete driven, performance driven, and we really work with our physiologists and our sports scientists to formulate a program that really is science-based and kind of really structured along the way. We're not afraid to try different things up here and do a lot of different things with altitude and other aspects that outside just normal training. I mean, there are a lot of different ways to train cross-country skiers, but up here we definitely focus on the science end and do a lot of testing and monitoring to help our athletes reach their potential.
Would you, as an organization, you know, maybe have proven junior skiers tested for parameters like VO2 max, say, and then if it's an indication that, hey, we might have a special athlete here, start giving them some resources? Or is it a function of, or more a function of, a junior skier would get the results and then they might have access to the specific scientific testing that you might be talking about?
Right now we're in the latter part of that. We're actually still you know, we don't have all the resources to reach out and test all our top juniors in the country. That's actually something we'd like to do. But we're still in the phase where we try to look at, results. We have a lot of good, benchmarks both nationally and internationally that we can look at. So if someone seems like at a young age, like they start to be on track, then we do try to help them and give them some resources and just make sure they're not getting, you know, left out, that we are focusing some of the resources to those specific individuals at a younger age.
How do you bridge the gap between development skiers and World Cup skiers?
Our development skiers are in training centers. So we're really trying to work closely with the training center coaches and also involve the training centers in the national ski team camps. So, you know, we were really fortunate to, over the last 5, 6, 7 years, to have some of the best skiers in the world, like Devin and Alex and Chandra and these other athletes that, you know, back 3, 4 years ago, all our national ski team athletes had World Cup podiums. And there's a lot of experience there, and bringing in other people to the training camps to give them exposure to those athletes is a really good way to bridge it, while working with their coaches and making sure that everyone's doing, you know, best practices at their training centers. And I feel like we've struggled a little bit with that in the past, but now I feel like more than ever, our training center coaches and the national ski team are really working closely together. We have a really cooperative team. We just had a meeting yesterday on the phone with everybody, talking even about the plans for next year. So we're already planning the camps together next year. And we've had such good success this year at the camps we've had with our development athletes and other national training center athletes that are off the development team, having exposure to our best World Cup team skiers. So I really feel like this year has been a huge success and a step forward as far as our collaboration with the training centers.
Sounds like you guys have held major camps in Banff, Canmore, I believe Italy, and Park City. Did I miss any?
Nope, that's been it this year.
Who did you bring to these camps, and why did you choose those specific venues?
So we had going back to even last year when the training center coaches and myself started working more closely and organically together, we really decided we wanted at least one training camp in Canada where all the training centers could access it pretty easily. So we started this year with the first camp here in Canmore. So that was the first camp, and that was a very collaborative camp and quite large with, you know, we had workouts where there were 50 plus athletes doing the workout. But it all worked really well, and we got great feedback from it. The next camp was a very, very small camp in Italy, primarily for Alex. He has a special level of funding since our budget is, you know, we've gotten our budget cut almost $500,000 in 2 years. So he was the only one that really qualified for extra funding for camp. So he went to Italy with Louis Bouchard, his personal coach, and our national ski team World Cup coach, to do a camp, and we're joined by Jess Cockney and Devin Kershaw, who paid for that camp on their own. That was the kind of second national ski team camp. And then the third camp we just finished in Park City. And again, all the training centers attended, the Alberta World Cup Academy, Thunder Bay, and the Quebec Training Center, the Pierre Harvey Training Center. So that was, again, really great camp, a lot of athletes. Again, we had over 50 athletes at some workouts. But again, really collaborative and good exposure for the rest of the athletes in Canada to, yeah, the world's best skiers, which, you know, are just happen to be on our World Cup team.
What is it that you might see in an individual at one of these camps that might make you think, we might have a special athlete here in our development pipeline?
Yeah, normally it's two things that really would trigger some discussion around that. One is like pure physical talent. So if we see someone that really shows just good flow on the skis and really just kind of with it at a young age and you know, good body type, you know, or whatever, that's one indicator. But, you know, it's cross country skiing is a two-piece deal. You have the physical side and you have the mental side. And so almost as important to us are athletes that really seem like they have it together mentally, and maybe they're not as developed or something as their cohorts at a certain younger age. But mentally, you can see that this athlete has something special, that they're very focused. They keep things in perspective well. They're driven. And you see that, their raw physical talent can be very good. And so those athletes, you also, want to pay a little bit more attention to, because you can't just go on the physical capacities, especially with younger athletes. I think that's a kind of a dangerous, people just develop at such different rates that you don't want to see some really developed, 18-year-old male and put all your eggs in that basket, because they might just be doing well at that age because they're more physically developed. And then when you see the really rare combination of someone who's got the physical talent and the mental capacities, and those athletes, you definitely want to work with and nurture along, because they don't come around that often.
Park City was an altitude camp. What type of physiological adaptations were you looking for? How did you measure them? And what were the biggest takeaways from that camp?
So we had two things going on there. We had most of our athletes, a majority of the athletes, down at around 1900 meters. And with those athletes, we were more focused on working on extraction, working on getting more efficient at extracting the oxygen out of the bloodstream into the muscles. And at altitude, since there's a little bit less oxygen to be extracted, your body has to get better at extracting it. So we kind of call that like an extraction camp. We were, in some individuals at down at 1900 meters, they were also getting, they're more like a responder at that altitude. So some athletes may have been growing red blood cells and getting some of those side benefits of being at altitude. But the majority of those athletes, we wanted to recover well, but to work on extraction during distance training. And then we were doing our intensity down low to start the camp with, and then focusing a little bit higher, like Soldier Hollow level, later on in the camp. So that was one aspect. The other aspect of the camp was mainly for our athletes that we knew had proven physiology that could handle staying up high for a long period of time, specifically to get better red blood values and hemoglobin mass. So we were really, those two athletes were Devin and Alex, and we really know that those two athletes had a good history of being able to recover very well and handle a heavy load and still be at altitude. So we had those two up at Upper Deer Valley doing a different living program. Everyone was pretty much doing the same training, but for Devin and Alex, they were 21 days up high and training at quite a load. We know that certain athletes like Ivan Babakov already have extremely good blood values, and so maybe we don't need to try to get that extra 0.5% out of Ivan by keeping him up high and risking him not recovering as well from the heavy load like we were doing in Park City. So in his case, we kept him down lower. So we had two kind of things, but really the major focus for majority of people was extraction.
Without a World Championships this season, what are the team's target events for the upcoming World Cup season?
Yeah, without a doubt, our biggest race this year is the Ski Tour Canada. So, I mean, that's huge for us. It's our World Championships, and we really, really want to have a lot of great results there from all different levels of our program. I know a lot of athletes in Canada who don't get a chance to race internationally as much as they'd like to feel that, this is a good opportunity. So we really want those athletes to step up to the plate and hopefully to get some younger athletes really showing us, they should be comfortable here in Canada racing. There's no time changes or different environments. This should be a good litmus test for our whole program and see what we can really do here at home. After that, the second big goal is the Tour de Ski. And, we've had a lot of close podiums to that in the past. We've gotten a lot of our best results during the Tour de Ski in the past. And so this year, we're also looking for that to be a big race series. And then after that, just individual World Cup podiums are what we're after.
How many additional start rights will be up for grabs for Canadians at these domestic World Cups, and how will those quota spots be filled?
Yeah, so we're going to fill all the quota. We have 26 total athletes that can Race for Canada. And, you know, we have a selection process that has many different tiers from, you know, international World Cup races all the way down to domestic NORAM races. So there's lots of opportunities to make the Ski Tour of Canada, 14 men, 12 women, 26 spots. That should really be ample opportunity for all our best athletes to get in there and have a shot at racing World Cups on home soil. We've finished the criteria for that a while ago. It's published, and I think everyone knows they just need to ski fast, whether it's internationally or domestically, and they'll make the team for that.
We're looking at all the same players again on the World Cup team this year. How are they doing in a general sense?
Really well. Like I spoke about before, we're really pleased with where everyone, we just finished our last test maybe about 10 minutes ago. And I just spoke with our physiologist, Jess Kriske, and we're both really pleased at where everybody is right now. Emily Nishikawa's just showing us like she's in the best shape that she's ever been in by far. She's made some really nice technical improvements. You know, Ivan, I feel like, has also come back to his former level. Like he showed us in the time trial in Soldier Hollow, he was 5 seconds behind Alex in that, and we know where Alex is. So, you know, Lenny's back, I think, as good as we've ever seen him before. Super fit. He's had a consistent summer of training. Graham Killick has made some nice strides forward, really showing us in a couple time trials that he can hang even skating with people like Ivan and Alex. Devin, who's in Oslo right now and living in Oslo and will join, he came to Park City, but then afterwards he went back to Norway. But he also was right, you know, leading a lot of the intensity sessions back. You know, he hasn't done that for a while with Alex, and it's showing that he's kind of on form again. So overall, as a whole program, we're really excited. The main thing is no one's had big injuries, haven't had any sickness in the team really in a couple months. Just really excited. I think we have a very like methodical, stable program, and we're just, you know, checking off the boxes, and now we're coming up to the part of the season where we need to really transition all that into you know, speed on the snow. And we just rolled out the snow here in Canmore, and we get our first opportunity to start skiing tomorrow morning. So that's really exciting as well. So right now I'm just really pumped at where everybody is.
So specifically about Alex, were there any modifications to his training plan due to his surgery last spring?
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. His surgery really allowed him to come to a new level. Like he's just been breaking all his running time trial efforts by minutes. And he's been just doing everything better than he's ever done it before, which is just kind of scary. He and Louis have had their foot on the gas, you know, with his training, doing quite a big load and also doing some pretty solid intensity. But you know, Alex has the really special quality, first of knowing himself really well, but secondly of just being able to handle and recover really, you know, high loads of training. He's going to be scary this year with his legs feeling good. You know, it's I don't think people really realized how much his leg issues impacted his skiing. Even last year when he's getting 2 medals at the World Championships, he's just, you know, he was so smart at how he monitors it, his legs in the past, and how he can control the pace at the front of the race if he needs to, just to make sure that his legs weren't going to kill him at the end of a race. And now we won't have to worry about that. So he can probably attack earlier. He's going to be a new man out there. And that's really, really exciting.
We should most likely expect to see him in that final hill climb in the tour.
Yeah, that's really, you know, something this year that there's been no indicators that he won't be able to do that. So it's really cool. He can finally, I mean, he has finished the Tour de Ski in the past, but he was, you know, the last time he did it was maybe three or four years ago. And when I saw him at the finish line and he came over, he was gray basically because it just stops. When you don't get the blood flow to the legs, it stops kind of the whole circulation of blood through the body. and his face was gray, everything was gray, and I was quite worried about him, like, from a physical standpoint. And that's when we just decided, like, no, you can't do the final hill climb anymore. It's just not, it's too dangerous, and it also is really not healthy for him. So we're going to see a new guy at the end of the Tour de Ski this year, which is really exciting, because he's always come to that last stage, you know, in third or fourth place in the top, for sure in the top 10. And yeah, now we can see him go up the hill as fast as he wants.
So, you know, obviously Devin is, it sounds like, primarily based out of Norway, or splitting between Norway and Camor. How's that going for him, and how often has he been able to work out with the team?
Yeah, so he was here all the way until his wedding in July. So that was great. He was here this spring, which was really key for us to help him, monitor him, get him back from his whooping cough. And, you know, we didn't do any intensity with Devin for the first 2 months of training this year, which was quite, you know, quite different than anything we've ever done with him. But we really wanted to be patient and slow to bring him back. And he was here in Canmore so we could monitor him well and work with our physiologist and kind of test through those early parts of the season. Then he went over to Norway, he got married, and he's had a really good summer of training in Norway. And then, so we saw him until July, and then he was in most of July and early part of August in Europe. And then we got him back for the Park City camp. He was here in Canmore for 10 days before the Park City camp, and then the full 3 weeks of the Park City camp. So it's been working really well. Devin, I think, is, you know, getting married and having a life change like that has been a really good thing for him. And his wife, Kristen, is really, really good influence, and she's very, you know, she knows what it takes. And Devin's definitely got all the training partners in the world he can want in Oslo. He just did a interval workout today with Simon Oystensen. And so, you know, he's got guys like that he can call up and do sessions with. So he's definitely in good company there, and we have a good plan, and we're communicating well. So it's going really well with Devin.
So switching gears to the women's team, what can you tell us about the women's team this year, and how will World Cup starts be doled out among the women on the senior national team?
Yeah, so we definitely put, you know, we had some specific focus to our women's program this year. We had a women's specific camp back in Quebec in August. They were basically attended by all the best women in the country, and that was really great camp, and we got a lot of good feedback from that. And moving into the season, we have a period of the World Cup just after New Year's, where we have a B tour that's primarily a women's B tour. We'll have a couple of guys on that as well, but we'll have five women on that, and they'll be racing some Opa Cup races and then two World Cup weekends. So yeah, that'll be a really nice period to give our women a lot of World Cup exposure. The first part of the season, it'll just be Emily Nishikawa. She's the only one that's kind of qualified for World Cup racing at the beginning of the year, and she's also the COC leader. So with that, we just have her as the only female on World Cup before Christmas. But then we're really hoping that after the B Tour, some of those women can score good results, and we can keep them on World Cup after that for the rest of the season.
When does Frozen Thunder start, and what races are planned for it? And what kind of turnout are you expecting from athletes both inside and outside of Canada?
Yeah, so first day of skiing's tomorrow. They're out there right now grooming it. It looks awesome. We have a slightly smaller loop than we've had before because of we had so many warm temperatures last February and March that they couldn't actually blow the snow. The loop, though, is going to be really good. It's in good terrain. And so, yeah, we're going to start tomorrow with actually the first official day of training on it. And then we have a Frozen Thunder Classic sprint race on Monday. And we won't have nearly as big a field as we've had in years past. A couple of reasons for that. I think people did hear that the pile of snow was smaller. So, you know, the U.S. and some of our Eastern Canadian clubs and programs have decided to stay where they are and not spend the money to come ski on a smaller loop. There's also a Frozen Thunder loop, or I guess it's not called Frozen Thunder back there, but there's a snow pile at Forêt Montmorency in Quebec. And they have a really nice size pile of snow there. And so they'll start grooming there as well fairly soon. So Thunder Bay and a lot of the Quebec and Ontario teams will be there training.
And what's next for you personally and for the team after Frozen Thunder?
So yeah, we head over to our first training camp, which is in Gällivare, Sweden. And we go over there November 14th. And we'll be there in the preparation leading into the Kusamo, the mini tour that starts in late November. Gällivare has been great in the past. They produce really good snow there, have a great training track, both with good hard terrain and some easier terrain. And the living accommodation, everything is really good. Plus the races this year there will be pretty high caliber with the Russians, the Czechs, the U.S. and ourselves. So nice to have the U.S. ski team. We kind of collaborated on that with them this year. It was nice to see that they wanted to join us up there in Gällivare. So it's always good when we have fellow North Americans to train and hang out with.
Thanks for your time and good luck with the rest of the season.
Thank you, Jason. Yeah, it's been a pleasure talking with you guys.